just as Spears was ill, was in Seton's hospital and explained his absence. Calling out the case of the Honorable William Clements, Governor, and others against Robert Thias, the argument from appellant.
May it please the court, I am Steve Bickerstaff, the firm of Bickerstaff, Ethan Smiley, of Austin, Texas. I represent appellants Clements et al. This is a direct appeal from the 167th District Court of Travis County. At issue is the constitutionality of House Bill 960 adopted during the regular session, last legislature. The enactment was passed in the 1981 regular session and draws 150 single-member representative districts in the state of Texas. Suit was filed on June 19th of this year. Trial was held shortly thereafter. The suit alleged that House Bill 960 constituted a wholesale cutting of county lines in violation of Article 3, Section 26 of the Texas Constitution. Although the district court did not find that a wholesale cutting of county lines occurred, the court declared House Bill 960 unconstitutional on the basis that it did unconstitutionally divide a total of 12 counties. The court divided those counties into three groups. It is from this judgment and injunction against the Secretary of State from enforcing that act for the elections of 1982 that the state now appeals. As I indicated, the judgment divided the counties in question into three categories. Those categories consist of first, eight counties with populations in excess of that necessary for one or more state representatives, with an excess in which the excess population was joined with contiguous county or counties to form an additional representative district. Those eight counties are Harris, Dallas, Bexar, Tarrant, Potter, El Paso, Webb, and Gregg County. The court also found that the bill was unconstitutional because three counties with a population not sufficient for a representative were cut when other combinations of counties might have avoided the cut. Those three counties are Erath, Coryell, and Cook. The court finally concluded that one county with population sufficient for two and almost three representatives was districted in violation of the Constitution because it had only one whole district contained within the county and two additional districts combined with contiguous areas to the county, that is Nueces County. The issues have been briefed in some detail, brief submitted by appellants and appellees before the court. My focus will be on a few issues, and let me outline those for you at this time. First, it will be my intention to provide a brief historical background to Article 3, Section 26 and House Bill 960. Secondly, I will discuss how the present case differs from the situation and circumstances before this court in 1971 in the decision of Craddock versus Smith. Third, I will discuss the alternative constructions of Article 3, Section 26 as they affect the relative burdens of the parties in this case. And finally, I will address the issue of the meaning of Article 3, Section 26 as it applies to those counties in Texas which have populations in excess of that necessary for one or more state representatives. Mr. Rick Gray will then address how Article 3, Section 26 applies to the remaining four counties that are in issue in this litigation. The constitutional provision at issue, Article 3, Section 26, has been part of the Constitution since 1876. It requires that members of the House of Representatives be apportioned among the several counties. It also has provided that the legislature may act under certain circumstances to take into consideration surplus population within those counties. Until the 1960s, each state reapportionment kept county lines intact. I do not believe that is disputed. In 1965, existing state representative districts in Texas were declared invalid as violating one man, one vote in the United States Constitution. In 1965, the legislature came back into session, drew new districts in Texas, and used for the first time in an effort, or used at that time, in an effort to keep counties intact, districts known as plutorial districts. A plutorial district consists of several counties, of which some of the counties contained within also elect their own representatives. For example, if Travis County had a right to represent, to elect two representatives and a surplus, Travis could be combined with Williamson County to form a plutorial district, which would elect then a third representative. In 1966, the Federal District Court in Kilgarland versus Martin declared these plutorial districts invalid under the United States Constitution. 1967, that district court decision was affirmed by the United States Supreme Court. And that is a significant point in the history of Article 3, Section 26. Each redistricting plan adopted since 1967, either by the Texas Legislature or by the Legislative Redistricting Board, has removed the excess population from those counties which have enough population for one or more state representatives. In 1971, such legislative enactments in which the excess population was removed were adopted in 1967 and amended again in 1969. In 1971, the enactment which drew legislative district lines in Texas was challenged in state court. The case Smith versus Craddock, this court held that that plan, in which there were 33 counties divided, 18 of which were rural counties, that is, counties which did not have sufficient population for a representative, constituted a wholesale cutting of county lines in violation of Article 3, Section 26. Immediately afterward, the Legislative Redistricting Board convened and redrew state representative districts. These two were then challenged in federal court. The Federal District Court declared them invalid under the United States Constitution, but insofar as the question was equal population, the United States Supreme Court then upheld the state legislative district drawn by the redistricting board in 1973 in the opinion of White versus Register. I give you this history, provide the history in these cases because I think all attorneys this morning will refer to the cases which I have mentioned. In 1975, the Texas legislature then readopted the plan which the legislative redistricting board had adopted in 1971. Those are the districts which we presently have, subject to some that have been redrawn by the federal court. In those districts today, there are 19 counties cut, of which 18 are counties in which the excess population has been removed from the county after the county received the whole representative district or district to which it was entitled. One rural county, Bowie County, is divided. With regard to the 1981 redistricting, without taking a great deal of the court's time, the process was extensive, with 12 public hearings conducted across the state, over 30 hearings conducted during the legislative process itself. In summary, it was open to all participants, including the parties that now appear as appellees, in this case, plaintiffs in the trial court. What is significant in that process for purposes of the issue before this court today is that at the beginning of the session, the legislature specifically adopted the policy in Resolution 58 that all proposed districts could preserve the integrity of recognized geographic boundaries where possible, particularly county lines. The process then followed during the session was to analyze the population by county and the rate of growth by county. It was then determined the ideal population of a district was then determined, which was 94,856, and each county in Texas which had population sufficient for one or more state representatives was identified. Each county with sufficient population in these metropolitan counties, the initial focus was on drawing the districts within those counties which were would affect minority voting strength because Texas for the first time in 1981 was under the Federal Voting Rights Act. So the first focus in the metropolitan counties was on drawing the urban areas. The metropolitan delegations were advised that if a county line was cut, it could be cut on only one occasion. And that is, if the excess population, if it were to be removed, would be removed at only one place on the county line. And generally, the rural counties were grouped together in districts. Everything was pulled together, and then through a series of amendments offered in committee, amendments offered on the floor of the House of Representatives, amendments offered in the Senate. The bill was adopted. How does this case differ from the circumstances of Smith versus Craig? Appellee's attempt to cloak this case and the evidence presented as being essentially the same as in Smith versus Craddock, in which this court struck down the redistricting in 1971. Circumstances of the case are very different. First, the plaintiff in Craddock did not challenge the right of the state to remove excess population from counties which had enough for one or more state representatives. In fact, they directed their witnesses to do otherwise. They directed their witnesses that the state had that right. All of the plans offered by the plaintiffs in Craddock for comparison with the state plan removed that population from the counties across the state. If we were basing this case on Craddock, and if the plaintiffs in this case were arguing the same theory of the law as the plaintiffs in Craddock, we would have only four counties at issue in this case, not 12. The eight counties in which the counties received the districts to which they were entitled by their population, and then whatever was left over was attached to an adjoining county, would not be an issue. It was not an issue when the plaintiffs themselves in Craddock proposed their plans or their theory of the case. A second distinction. The plaintiffs in Craddock offered a very straightforward alternative plan to show that the state could have avoided cutting the rural counties. There were 18 rural counties cut. The plaintiffs in Craddock showed you could reduce that to one. The appellees in this case have played games, while urging the example that eight of the counties, which the district court found were divided in violation of Article 3, Section 26, could not be divided. The statewide plans offered by the plaintiffs for comparison themselves divided one or more of these counties. The counties divided by the plaintiffs in the plans offered included Harris, Dallas, Bear, Gregg, and Webb counties, five of the eight counties which are at issue in appeal, five of the excess counties in issue on appeal in this case. They, in addition, cut Galveston County in every one of the plans, and Galveston County is not cut under the state plan. Third, the plans in issue are themselves very different from Craddock and today. Where Craddock divided 18 rural counties, in this case, House Bill 960 divided 10, but the district court found only three of those to be violative of Article 3, Section 26. And finally, the state, and this is, I think, most significant from the Craddock case, is the state offered no evidence at all in 1971. When the plaintiff rested, the attorney for the state stood and said, we have no evidence. In 1981, the state provided the basis for the decisions which it was compelled to make during the legislative process and the evidence to show why the individual counties were divided. Now, appellees do not seem to dispute that the state made a good faith effort to try to comply with state and federal law. Rather, appellees argue that a redistricting plan which cuts county lines is presumed to be unconstitutional, even though it is admitted that in order to comply with federal law, county lines must be cut. Their argument is that any redistricting plan which cuts the county line is prima facie unconstitutional, and that they can show that the state, that the law is unconstitutional by showing that a better or alternative plan could have been devised. And that brings me to the argument that the district court erred because it unlawfully intruded in the legislative process, and because House Bill 960 substantially complies with Article 3, Section 26. And why should I talk in terms of substantial compliance? It is for the reason I just mentioned, that no one disputes that county lines must be divided in Texas in order to comply with federal law. The appellant's plans in this case divide anywhere from 17 to 22 to 31 county in Texas, depending upon the methodology used in each of the individual alternative plans which they offer. But it is conceded that county lines must be cut in some fashion. Without belaboring historically the presumptions in favor of state statutes, I think it is important that to bear in mind that the presumption which is advocated by plaintiffs of the invalidity of the state statute is directly contrary to the historical presumption which would be applied to any state statute. As this court held in 1922 in a redistricting suit in which there was challenge to the House districts in 1921, this court stated it has been repeatedly held by this court and the courts of all jurisdictions that a legislative enactment will not be held unconstitutional and invalid unless it is absolutely necessary to do so. The opinion is Smith versus Patterson, in which this court upheld the 1921 House Representative District. On the basis that any federal requirements arising from the federal constitution or from statute would require necessary change in state law to comply with that. It is clear under federal law at this point that equal population does mandate that counties in Texas be divided. All prior plans in Texas that have divided counties have done so to comply with that requirement of the federal constitution. This is the first plan where there has been questions regarding the Voting Rights Act. It occurs with regard to one county in particular, that is Nueces County, which we feel the decision was justified expressly on the basis of the Voting Rights Act.
Will one of your counsels go into the justification of Nueces?
Yes, sir. At this division, Mr. Gray will address that. Mm-hmm. The position of appellees is to reverse the presumption that I indicated. And the position of appellees is unprecedented in two regards. One, the reversal of presumption that any legislative plan that divides county lines is prima facie unconstitutional. Therefore, the standard presumption of validity is replaced by a presumption of invalidity. Secondly, the position of the appellees and the court below is unprecedented in that they urge that the state then is required to come forward to show not that it proceeded in a rational and reasonable and justifiable manner, but that each and every cut which may have occurred was necessary in the sense that there was no other alternative which might be conceived. The state urges that when it is required to come forward, that the standard to be applied is one of the rational basis for the state's action. Not only is the procedure adopted by the court below unprecedented, but it's unworkable in the legislative process. The position of the state is that House Bill 960 should be judged on the basis of a rational state plan, which is, as I set out in the brief, the standards which have been applied by the other courts. And we think that this is consistent with the decision of this court in 1971. The court did not indicate that the presumption of validity was being dispensed with or that the state was being held to a requirement for showing that each individual division that may occur was required by the federal constitution, but rather that the state adopted, we think, a rational and reasonable approach to its obligations under state and federal law. And the court's decision is not only unprecedented in terms of the standards, but also in terms of its intrusion into the legislative process by setting out a standard to be met and then trying to dictate the procedure which the legislature itself could follow to reach that standard rather than judging the bill on its face. Article 3, Section 26 does not prohibit the joining of surplus population in a county with contiguous counties. It is important in looking at Article 3, Section 26 that it does not prohibit the cutting the county line. It's stated in the affirmative. The affirmative is
to apportion the state on the basis of counties. The purpose to see that each county receives the representation to which it is entitled by its population. That meant, in the last provision of Article 3, Section 26, which specifically reads, that when any one county has more than sufficient population to be entitled to one or more representatives, such representative or representatives shall be apportioned to such county, and for any surplus, it may be joined to a representative district with any other contiguous county or county. That is, the Constitution has recognized that a situation will occur where you have more population in a county than can be drawn into districts within that county. And that surplus population, then, can be acknowledged by the state and can be utilized by the state. In order to give the county the representation to which it is entitled. In 1971, this court held that with the nullification of the plectoral district provision, it becomes permissible to join a portion of that county with contiguous area of another county to form a district. We believe that that is the correct interpretation of Article 3, Section 26, because if any other interpretation is adopted, then a county cannot receive the representation to which it is entitled by its population. And that when the whole representative districts are drawn within the county, and that county then has an excess population, it not only is not violated of Article 3, Section 26, it is consistent with it to take that excess population and attach it to contiguous areas to form an additional representative district. It is not the position of the state of Texas that Article 3, Section 26 is invalid. Instead, as Mr. Jaworski urged to the Supreme Court in 1972, the state constitution of Texas requires that where a county has sufficient population to entitle it to a representative, the county itself shall be the representative district. If the county itself is too small to be entitled to a representative, it shall be joined with one or more contiguous areas to compose a representative district. If a county has excess population, it is entitled to have as many districts as its population warrants within its county lines, and the excess may be joined with a contiguous area. In concluding, on the question of the removal of excess, I believe that the interpretation I just read is the correct one of Article 3, Section 26. Appellees in the court below urged that instead the legislature should attempt to retain the excess population within the county if it is possible to do so and not violate a 10% deviation. The state of Texas was justified in its decision to remove the excess population from the county, and on the basis of the errors of the district court in terms of the burden and presumption and in failing to construe Article 3, Section 26 appropriately, we would ask that the court reverse the district court and affirm the constitutionality of Article of House Bill 96. Thank you.
So how much time do you anticipate using?
We were from 5 to 8.
How long will it be done?
I can go as long as the court.
Over this time, and I will be 3 years.
I can be as flexible as need be, Your Honor. I would anticipate
you
being somewhere.
You want to be informed, you're not even heard.
In the area of 10 minutes, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Rick Gray. I'm the executive assistant to Attorney General Mark White. I intend to address two specific areas this morning: the splitting in Nueces County, and the splitting of the counties of Elak, Cook, and Corlett. These are the points 2 and point 3 that Judge Park found to be constitutionally infirmed by House Bill 968. Before I begin, though, I would like to address to the court the issue of what standards should be applied in the UN and discipline process. With the population explosion in the 1970s, the process has become even more complex and more difficult than ever before. The standard district in 1971 was somewhere in the area of 75,000. It has now gone to something in the area of 95,000. The process is becoming ever increasingly more difficult. The 67th legislature attempted to complete the balancing act balancing between very complex and difficult issues of federal law and the federal constitutional requirements, as well as the federal voting rights law, and the requirements of Article 3, Section 26, then you should not touch county lines when you can avoid doing so. This is not an easy balancing act. It's a very difficult balancing act. But I believe history will prove that the 57th legislature did a fantastic job in doing so, and did so in a reasonable, good faith manner. Now, I would like to turn specifically to Nueces County. Nueces County is, by 1981 standards, could be considered to be the Grayson County of 1971. It is a county that is entitled by its population to 2.82 districts. It does not have two districts wholly within Nueces County. It has one district wholly within Nueces County. It has a district that is part of Nueces and Clayburg, and a district that is part of Nueces and Orange.
Let me ask you a question. All the effect that any effort to get this effort by the legislature, but certainly pose a question. Let's assume that Dallas County decided 16 people to represent it. Divided by another legislature so that it comes up with one, and the other 15 are grouped with people around it. Tell me how you think that would work.
That would be constitutionally infirm unless it could be substantiated on the basis of either one man, one vote, or the federal voting like that.
So that's what we did in Nueces, isn't it?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Nueces County, if it cannot be substantiated upon the federal requirement is constitutional violation of Article 3, Section 26. It is a position to state that that's absolutely, that it is not violation of Article 3, Section 26, because specifically it was cut to comply with the federal voting rights act. The record before this court, before Judge Park, bears that out. What happened in the Nueces County? The census data was first became available on April 1, 1981, giving the legislature approximately 50 days in which to redraw the entire 150 districts. As Nueces County was initially drawn, it had its two full seats, plus a portion was joined to Aransas County. When that became known on the House floor, Representative Hugo Belanga, who is a representative from Nueces County, came to Representative Tim Von Dolan and said, "I have been in contact with the Mexican American Legal Aid, the Defense Education Fund. We believe that Nueces County, as now drawn, constitutes a retrogression in my district and violates the Federal Voting Rights Act, and we will challenge any submission on those grounds." What did the legislature do in response to that challenge? They said, "We don't want to violate the Federal Voting Rights Act. We want to avoid doing that." What was the response by Representative Berlanga and Maldef? "What you have to do is you have to increase my Mexican American population so that my district is not just a rest. And the way you do that is you bring in population from Clayburg County and attach it to my district." That's exactly what happened. They did that on one occasion, ran the percentages, took in Representative Berlanga, the intern communicated with Maldef, and they said, "We are still not high enough on our Mexican American percentage. You need to go deeper into Clayburg County." What did the legislature do? They went deeper into Clayburg County to accommodate exactly what Representative Berlanga and the Mexican American Legal Education and Defense Fund was requesting. The legislature, I believe, should be entitled to rely upon the federal members of the legislature and groups such as Maldef that it deals with on a regular basis to come forward and work with the legislature in a good faith manner and to present to the legislature plans that they believe are adequate and will substantiate the requirements of state law and federal law.
Now, I think the application is to accommodate two full representatives plus the next
step. That is the joint state by the county. That is part of that position, yes. And that's
one person, one vote.
It certainly does not violate the Texas Constitution because it has its two seats and a portion thereof. Whether or not it violates one man, one vote, or the Federal Voting Rights Act has never been determined. Those lines have not been drawn to determine if, in fact, a retrogression would exist or not exist. Another significant factor is that it may not be technically a legal argument, but it's certainly an equitable argument. The legislature should be entitled to consider the circumstances as presented to it at the time it's going through the redistricting process.
Well, absolutely.
But at the same time, Your Honor, if the standard is that anybody after the session can come forward and say, I have a plan that mathematically cuts in one less county, does that automatically mean that the entire plan falls and a new plan has to be created? And then 6 months down the road, if someone else comes forward and says, the new plan, I have now a mathematical formula that cuts one less county from that, there has to be a logical end to where we draw the line. I submit to this court that it has to be, did the legislature, given the circumstances, and given its time frame, and given its information, balance the act? Did it comply to the best of its ability? Did it go forward in a reasonable, good faith manner? It's redrawing the 150 legislative seats, knowing that it had a standard, federal law that wasn't clear, and a state law standard that had to comply with federal law to be precedent over state. And I submit to you in the Lacey County, given the fact that the problem of retrogression arose at the 11th hour, that suggested the solution to that problem was presented by the representative whose district was involved, and that representative was in contact with the Mexican American Legal Education Defense Fund, and the specific purpose of doing what was done in the Lacey County was to avoid any possibility of retrogression. That has to be a
thing. You think that overrides the Constitution fine if the American County is part of two state representative districts? You want to get down on the plan?
Yes, Your Honor. I submit to this court that whether it be the Federal Voting Rights Act or the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, the one person, one vote concept, that those two requirements have to take precedence, and the courts of this country have held that they do take precedence over any contrary state law.
Okay, but which one of them do you claim takes precedence over the Constitution?
I claim that both of them take precedence, but as to the Lacey County, it's specifically the Federal Voting Rights Act, which is that issue. That is the basis, and I can't represent to this court that any other considerations were involved in the Lacey County as is reflected by the court record. Or by the transcript of hearings before the legislature, so the interchange between Representative Von Dolan and Representative Belanda on the House floor, which is set out in our brief, specifically deals with the Voting Rights Act, and they specifically acknowledge that they are in fact cutting the Lacey County twice, but they acknowledge that doing so to comply with the Voting Rights Act, and that was the basis of the cut, and we stand before this court saying that to comply with the Voting Rights Act, that in fact can be done. I would further urge the court to consider this, that the districts drawn with the Lacey County are in substantial compliance with the concept that it be given the district that it's entitled to. It has a one district that's 100% within the Lacey County, the second district is 95% within the Lacey County, and the third district is 91% within the Lacey County. So any adverse effect is de minimis if there is an adverse effect. I submit the court that there is none. Now, turning briefly to the counties of Cook, Coryell, and Erath, these are the counties.
You found a slide, but I want you to say that.
Thank you, ma'am. These are the counties that did not have adequate population for one referendum. They were split, nevertheless. And the justification for their splitting is set out very clearly in the referendum of Tim Mondone's testimony. To comply with the one man, one vote principle. What the legislature intended to do and attempted to do throughout the redistricting process, and specifically with these three counties, was to draw districts where one district population is not substantially larger or smaller than the population of another district, and thereby ensure that the vote of one person was not substantially heavier or lighter than the vote of another district. And each individual county that Richard Von Doan from the stand was asked these specific questions as to why these checks were made, and each specific response was that the guns were equalized population. There is absolutely no evidence in the record to the contrary as to any of these three things. Specifically as to Corriero County, the area of Corriero County that is emitting the top COVID, the area containing 14 is the testimony developed at the legislature at a more genuine community of interest with the citizens in Bell County than it did in fact with Corriero County. A cut had to be accomplished for population equalization, and it was logical that that be the area that would be cut. As to ERAP County, the cut was de minimis to sort out. The county is some 22,500 individuals, and right at 3,000 removed, 3,000 removed for the equalized the district that was joined to, so you would not have a 6,000 vote swing, which is clearly a one man, one vote justification for doing so. Cook County is a more difficult question. It is split right down the middle. Half of Cook is in one district, half of Cook is in the other. The justification for this, however, though, is it's location within in the northeastern corner of the state. When you start drawing lines across the state, you're going to have a ripple effect. You cannot draw an isolated area of the state and say, I can draw this in contact with Allegheny County cuts and not represent that you're going to have adverse cuts down the line. Whether you start in the east and move west or the west and move east, each time you draw areas keeping the population in mind, you're going to have problems as you move. A problem like that is encountered in Cook County. And at one point in time, you're going to hit a crunch, the legislature hits the crunch in Cook County, and a cut was mandated. The fact of the matter is that this legislature, more so than ever before, is very mindful of its constitutional state and federal requirements for the district. It undertook that process in a very diligent manner to satisfy both those requirements and to walk that path. I beseech the court, if they be wrong, that a roadmap be drawn for future legislatures to follow in the district process. I submit to this court, though, that there is not a legislature that can draw a more fair, more complete, and a more excellent redistricting of the Texas House.
Mr. Council, what do you think, Paul? How much time do you have?
5 minutes, Your Honor. I hope I don't use it. My name is Joe Matthews. I'm from the law firm of Matthews and Thorpe in Dallas, Texas, and I represent 71 representatives in the D-American case. I would like to direct the court's attention and discuss with the court very briefly the problem that is faced by any court in dealing with the constitutionality of the state statute when made against federal statutes, the federal constitution, and the state constitution. The trial court in this case was faced with the presumption of validity of the statute, the age-old judicial reluctance to nullify legislative action, with the duty to interpret and uphold the state and federal constitution, based on their points of divergence or conflicting. The trial court, I think, attempted to resolve these problems and take due consideration of the presumption and the election by establishing a burden of proof on both first the plaintiff and then the state. And as I understood, what transpired in the court before the trial court, took the position that the plaintiff, those attacking the validity of the statute, established and sustained their burden of proof by the mere showing of the cutting of a county line. And then took the position that a presumption of unconstitutional arose and placed the burden upon the state to show that each such cutting was absolutely necessary to conform with the one-man, one-vote requirement or the voting act requirement. On the surface, this quote, as stated in the abstract that way, has the appeal of logic and reason. As a matter of fact, when you stop and try to digest the facts that surround the problem here, we find that this burden of proof approach put an intolerable burden upon the state. It put an intolerable burden upon the legislature. And it certainly puts the court in the position of ignoring the historical reluctance and being tempted to substitute its judgment for the prerogatives of the legislature. First of all, when you have 254 counties and only 150 legislative districts, and you have the requirements of the one man, one vote of the 14th Amendment and the protection of minorities by the 15th Amendment and voting on that, you have a situation where it is recognized and agreed that county lines have to be cut. Now, when you start with that premise, that means that the judicial or the presumption of validity of the statute no longer exists. Because everybody agrees it has to be done. So I think we're starting from the wrong place. Then the trial court took the position that each separate cutting must be justified as absolutely required. It treated each county as an island, if you will. And went further and tried to accommodate the federal constitution with the state constitution by taking the position that if there is an overpopulated county, a county with excess population, that excess may not be used in another county unless it exceeds a 10% deviation from the smallest district, and that anything under the net cannot be used. It has established, if you will, a mathematical formula without regard to the fact around everything that is involved in the legislative process. The trial court determined a fixed numerical or population variance small enough to be considered de minimis and to satisfy without question the as nearly as practicable standard under the 14th Amendment of the Federal Constitution. The special submit to this court that this cannot be done. That the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution will not be satisfied by saying anything, any variance under 10% without regard to any other requirement is de minimis and we will not hear you. And it will not allow a legislature or a trial court to say we are going to set this standard at 10% and that's it. And you cannot make any variance. On top of this, we are faced in this case with a situation where the trial court has established this 10% limit and said any variance below 10% cannot be used in determining what county line should be. I think that the principle of thrust of the Supreme Court opinion in the register case as well as the companion case of the United States Supreme Court will not permit such a systematic underrepresentation of urban voters. And this is compounded further, as I pointed out in my brief, by the fact that the majority of the blacks and the majority of the Mexican American people live in our urban areas and our excess population counties. Now, back to the burden upon the legislature. I respectfully submit to the court that the burden upon the legislature is not to be mathematically accurate and deal with abstract academic mathematical formulae. The burden upon the legislature is to, in its legislative process, exercise good faith and based upon the fact put before it in the exercise of its good faith, make a determination as to what is as close as practical to the one man, one vote rule, and balancing that with the county line requirement, make a reasonable, good faith effort based upon the facts before it to establish and maintain these constitutional requirements. When the legislature has done that, I respect the commission of this court. This court is not laboring under such a heavy burden in interfering with the legislative process. And it has recognized its exemption as the law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Arguments from the appellate.
May it please the court, David Richards on behalf of the appellees. There is a brief history here that's been alluded to, and perhaps it will help my argument if I put it slightly in focus. As Mr. Bickerstaff indicated, in 1971, this court decided what is the only precedent we've got to go on, as far as technically concerned, that's Smith versus Pratt. In that case, the opinion says that in that instance, the cutting of 33 county lines in the enforcement plan constituted a wholesale cutting of the county lines in violation of the Texas Constitution, and that the plan was unconstitutional under the Texas Constitution unless the cutting of those county lines was required or justified by considerations of one person, one vote. I believe I quoted correctly. The plan we're looking at today cut 34 county lines. That is one more county line and was cut in 1971. After the decision Smith versus Craddock, the case did move, or the apportionment plan did move, to the federal court, where issues were litigated concerning single-member legislative districts, as well as whether the plan had excessive population deviation in it. The three-judge federal court felt that the state's apportionment plan had excessive population deviation. On appeal, the United States Supreme Court reversed. On appeal, the state said, the state of Texas said to the United States Supreme Court, that state constitution required that county lines be cut only when absolutely necessary to satisfy one person, one vote consideration. The brief in the United States Supreme Court said, quote, future Texas redistricting authorities were warned to cross county lines only where absolutely necessary. That was the state reading of Smith versus Craddock. The future redistricting authorities would cut county lines only where absolutely necessary. The United States Supreme Court balked this, accepted it as being state policy, and in its opinion said, the Texas Constitution, Article 3, Section 26, expresses the state policy against cutting county lines wherever possible in forming representative districts. Accepting that state policy, the United States Supreme Court approved what we call a deviation in the state plan of 9.9%. That is, they said, the deviation contained in these representative districts is constitutional because it is attributable to a valid state policy of preserving county lines. Can I step over here, please?
In that process, the United States Supreme Court and White versus Register approved these districts. They approved District 3, the District of Harrison in Russ County, with a population deviation over the ideal of 5.8%. You know, the approved the District 38, Caldwell, Tonal, and Waterloo, deviation of 5.7%. These were deviations that the United States Supreme Court approved in 1973 in White v. Register. And we think it's very important to take these deviations and put them against them what took place this time. Because one of the counties was cut by House Bill 950 is Protestant. It had a population of 98,637. If it had been left alone, it would have been a deviation of 3.9%. That is, less by almost 2%, the deviation previously approved by the United States Supreme Court. And the really funny thing is, the House Bill 960 created six districts that were larger than that which would have been the result of holding Potter County intact. In another way, this very plan, the and business that would have been treated partially as a managed cost. Now, at this point, I believe that the Supreme Court opinion in Smith versus Craddock is absolutely explicit. Judge Reed's opinion says that any apportionment of
districts, if a county is entitled to a legislative district, and if the deviation, if the variation of that population is within permissible limits of variation, then that county, the Texas Constitution requires that that county constitute a separate district. This is exactly what this court said in Smith v. Craddock. If a county can be left alone, given one legislative district and remain within permissible limits of variation, then that county is constitutionally entitled to be left alone as a single legislative district. And that's clear to the case in Clark County. Indeed,
there's no suggestion that Clark County is cut in order to provide a way of life. No suggestion. I asked everything about going on the cross-examination. Is it purpose to say that Clark County could be left intact, allocated a single legislative district, and remain within the deviation guidelines of this plan, that could have been. But they just simply thought that they had only left their population and they would use it now. But the real point is, they didn't need to use it now. You could have left Potter County intact. The thing is, in our plan, and this is just an alternative, we demonstrated the trial court staff. If you left Potter County intact, affect only two adjoining districts to which three, and half, plan, now this plan, our alternative is entirely within the straight line plan. There's no ripple effect whatsoever. So let Clark County pass to draw these districts and stay within the voting rights act and within the requirements of one person, one vote, and the six witnesses don't know. West County is another thing. Same thing. And this is a good decision. Webb County, again, was a plan which Webb County has cut. And what in Webb County? What in Webb County? Again, Webb County could have been left intact in the single legislative district, median to 4.6%, well within the guidelines of John 16 for accepting in the register. And in fact, smaller than the district in the district in Travis County in 1850 was larger than West County was in 1850. And what we did in West County, and I think this sort of points up,
well, we're not just talking about the game plan when we preserve county lines intact.
They've got West County twice. And they got four people up here. Four people in this enumeration district taken out of West County and put up an adjoining district with eight other counties and several eight other counties. If I understand what the Texas law requires, to keep up legislative districts and create a voting precinct, they're going to have to create, West County is going to create a voting precinct for four people. Those four people are going to vote for a legislator who comes from somewhere else. They're going to vote for a county commissioner and a Webb County commissioner and a county judge in Webb County. And they're going to have to locate that voting place in that precinct consists of four people up there in the pocket of Webb County. But we're saying that, and they don't claim, no one claims that the cutting of Webb County was required by one person, one vote, or required by voting rights act considerations. It was just done. And we think done in direct violation of the explicit mandate that Smith has passed. These were counties which have left alone, so constituted as one single legislative district without offending one person, one vote. And we think Smith versus Craddock said that's what should be done. We think what the state is really arguing is that somehow there is a difference between urban counties and rural counties in the application of Article 3, Section 26. They seem to be saying that we can take the urban counties of Texas, that is counties that have more than 95,000 people,
And if we identify a surplus there, we can cut that county line, and Article 3, Section 26 doesn't affect it. This has to be their argument. When you look at El Paso County, it comes there, too. So, El Paso is almost in the perfect.
So the left loan, 5 cents created and equally divided, there's a 2% variation. If 5 cents was created in there, shown with that expense mediation, and 5,450 persons are taken out of county and tied over here into a district that flows, picking up the Custis, Culberson, Reed, Loving County. It's a good piece of 5,000 people out of El Paso County, kind of all the way in over here. We move to Southwest County. All you have to do, more than an alternative, is to see just the kind of federal plan for the federal constitution. You move one county. Create a no difference of just El Paso and join 1771 to come up with a constitutional acceptable plan that is not the federal constitution. And I want to satisfy Article 3, Section 26. If this includes Pocket County, in 1771, there is a constitutional satisfaction plan and not such that the tax instead of the federal. Now, the really troublesome thing, it seems to me, about the state's argument is that they identified that surplus they claimed of some 5,000 people in El Paso entitled them to cut El Paso County. And yet, when we went down to Galveston County, for some reason, they had an excess there of over 6,000. They didn't cut Galveston County. They left Galveston County intact as a two-member legislative district, two single-member districts. And the state's testimony, Mr. Von Dolan's testimony on Crosswell, or Mr. Von Dolan's testimony, and I have a bad record reference, but it's in the record, and I ought to clear it up because of the typo. But Mr. Von Dolan's testimony was that they considered the excess population in Galveston of 6,000 some odd, 6,228, to be nominal. That was a nominal excess. This is page 686 of the record. And that the preservation of county lines in that instance justified keeping Galveston County intact. You take that same and walk across the state of Texas to El Paso County, and for some reason, the El Paso County, 5,472 people, it's not a nominal excess, but rather that's one which entitled them to cut El Paso County. And we say that when the trial court found, for example, that the cutting of El Paso County violated Article 3, Section 26, it did so on the basis of a record that demonstrated just what the court found, that this cutting was not justified or required by any constitutional consideration that overcame the requirements of the section. Mr. Gladden is going to speak more specifically about Tarrant County, where again the same thing happened. Tarrant County has an excess of essentially the same as in Galveston, and yet Tarrant County was cut, and as a result, they cut three additional counties just because they cut Tarrant County. They cut the counties Erath, Cook, and Coryell because they cut Tarrant County. Even I would defer to Mr. Gladden on that feature of the argument. The same reasoning applies, especially with respect to every urban county. The cutting of those urban counties was not required either by Voting Rights Act considerations or considerations of one person, one vote. Frankly, Representative Von Dolan testified from their point of view, though I don't have any excuse about it, they felt that that was a legislative prerogative, that if there was somewhat over the ideal, they could just take that population and do with it as they chose. And yet Representative Von Dolan also testified that, for example, our configuration here in El Paso
El
Paso County's testimony is that there was offered to the legislature through representative bias. He's one of the here. He's planning to keep El Paso County intact.
One other question is, your theory require that the legislature begin with the larger county
Well, they even testified that their theory began that way, but I think our theory would require, well, my theory or our theory would require that you take the Texas Constitution and you treat it as a serious requirement. Not that you say, can these counties be kept intact without...
Can it be kept intact without beginning with a big county?
Can it be kept intact without beginning with a big county? The testimony is the record that they began with a big county. But it seems to me you can begin either place. Well, in El Paso County, it doesn't matter where you begin.
If you begin with a little county, you end up moving into big county.
You may or may not, or you'll get a check. But the record testimony here does not say that that's the fifth place in El Paso County. The record testimony is that they identified El Paso County and that they said in the estimate here of 6,000 people, and they told them out here, you've got 6,000 persons to play with to draw a vision. That they said, in fact, began with the record county, identified that they've got the excess, and said, once you get an excess, you can do what they need to do. Another way, I can conceive of a circumstance, and I think if it's a fair answer to, if I just fairly answer the question, there would obviously be an instance, for example, where you would take, if your choice became cutting an urban county or a rural county, and you would take some excess out and save a rural county's intact, can you do that in Constitution justified? But that's not what happened here. Constitutional class, I believe, I think. I think that's correct. Well, let me move on to Rankin County, because I think my time is probably running on. I think we all agree that Nueces County and the Constitution mandate that it be allocated to full legislative seats. This was not done. And trial court found that it could have been allocated those two full seats and stayed within the requirements of one person, one vote, and the Voting Rights Act. And indeed,
actually, on cross-examination of Mr. Rich, of Representative John Dolan, while he was in the middle of the trial, I admit that they wanted to develop, and it's clear that this configuration is just within a legislative statewide plan. Per general bill, except Nueces, given the Nueces County two representatives. In fact, the board of the federal land that is sent to Ramsey County is back. They stand up high on the voting rights act, and one person in the time. That's taken on the old standards, that's on the generation. So representatives are known.
So there was clearly a configuration there, and a very simple configuration, which preserved that county line, preserved the Ramsey County, and also gave to Nueces County the two districts to which it was entitled, as we all agree, I think, under the Constitution. Moving to the small counties, which the trial court found were unconstitutional cut, and that is the counties of Erath, Cook, and Coryell, I at least want to take one shot at the state characterization testimony of the explanation for the cut of Erath, for example. Now, these counties, I mean, we have a configuration that Mr. Gladden will talk about, but I asked on cross-examination, why was the Erath cut? And he said, well, the answer was, well, Erath was sitting there next to Johnson, Hood, and Somerville, and they didn't have quite enough population to fill it out, so they just cut Erath. But it's perfectly apparent that you didn't have to cut Erath. You could put it together just another slightly different variation, which we demonstrated, save Erath, save Cook, and save Coryell. And when asked, and the state acknowledged that this combination was this is Representative Von Dolan's testimony at 789. I understand that there are other combinations of counties that can be drawn to counties that you might be speaking to, which would avoid the cut. Now, it seems to me that Article 3, Section 26 says something to the legislature on this point. That is, if there are other combinations of counties, small counties, that can be put together and avoid the cut, the legislature ought to do it. And that's what I think Article 3, Section 26, and I think that's what this court said in Smith versus Craig. That if you acknowledge that there are other combinations and you're aware of them, do it that way because that's what the Constitution contemplates. We were chided somewhat on the nature of our proof in the trial court, and let me say that maybe we just overproved because we proved everything we could think of. We proved it individually
by the passing such a that we could keep those counties intact like El Paso and not disturb any other aspect of the court, you know, of the legislative change. We proved that people have done the same with Webb, proved that you have done the same with Potter. We proved you could do the same with New Asia. Then we also showed that you could develop other configurations which eliminated all the small county cuts, that is, all 10 of the small counties that are cut in. And we proved that, essentially, just to show, which we thought was what the court had done or had approved in Smith versus Craddock as a method of proof, that there were a multitude of variations. Now, the trial court didn't find factually on our favor in all of them, but the trial court sure found as a fact that we did demonstrate that as the cuts he found, they weren't required by any overweening federal constitutional or statutory requirements. And in fact, that the cuts were in violation of Article 3, Section 6. Thank
you. Please, Court. My name is Don Gladden. I'm from Terrence County, and I will address further argument for Appley. I represented an intervenor from Terrence County in the court below, who lives in that portion of Terrence County that was segregated out of Terrence County and put into a combination of Parker, Wise, and one half of Cook County. I want to address the court. I want to talk about that area of the district in the portion. First of all, Terrence County is not one of those almost 10% excess population that they were talking about the trial court looking at and said applying some kind of a test of saying within 10%. Terrence County, if left intact, and apportioned 9 words, would have had an average deviation of 0.84%, less than 1%. There was no reason whatsoever to take from Terrence County, citizens of Terrence County. I think that the Texas Constitution, when it was adopted and applied from 1875 to 1966, apportioning legislature to counties, it was done because the county is the basic building block of the state of Texas. Legislators and counties address the problems of citizens of counties. 9 representatives were not apportioned to Terrence County under House Bill 950. 9 representatives were apportioned to a portion of Terrence County. And that portion that my client lived in was not given a representative. He's a citizen of Terrence County, but he may have to go to the Red River to talk to his representative up there in that one half of Cook County. That's, and they talk about maintaining areas intact. Gainesville, see, Gainesville was split in half when they divided Cook County in half. The 13,000 put into the Terrence County, Wise County portion, and the other portions of some other district. So I think you have to look at what was the purpose of Article 3, Section 26, and why did the legislature keep it intact from 1875 to 1966 to see whether there was some meaningful purpose behind it. Then you go to the one man, one vote requirement. You say, well, guys, the federal constitution says that we can't do that anymore. And then you look at Terrence County, and they say, we delved into Terrence County with a 7,000 population excess and took 11,402 people out of Terrence County and sold
fairly effectively just denied them any meaningful representation in the court by placing them as excess independent existence. Now then, a great deal was made about the fact that you can't look at it in isolated eyes. Let's look and see what happened, or what did happen as a result of cutting into Tarrant County and taking those 11,000 people out. When they took those 11,000 people out and forcing them throughout Central Texas, it then became necessary to cut E-Rex, cut Coria, and chop Cook County completely in half.
How many representatives in Tarrant County ended?
They ended up with 9 representatives. They had 9
half. The argument is they got 9, they could have had 9, but there was...
Okay, my argument is that my client who lives in Tarrant County doesn't have one of those 9, does. He has one that he may have to go to the Red River and see. He's a citizen of Tarrant County, lives in Tarrant County, and the purpose of maintaining county is to keep a relationship between the legislature and the county government. We decide how many probate courts we get, we decide how much money is spent on highway right-of-way acquisitions by counties and dealing with the state. And so when the Constitution says these legislators shall be apportioned among the counties, there was reason behind it. And the legislature chose to say in excess in urban counties, we can ignore the Constitution and take citizens out of urban counties and put them in adjacent counties if we want to. We wanted to...
I have a little problem with your argument. Not for us to find
them. Okay.
Parents and father of mine, they got 9, they had a purpose.
Yes.
They didn't make the purpose, they have to do something with that purpose.
No. In fact, I think the Constitution prohibits it doing something with that purpose if it has to cut county lines to do with that purpose.
Okay, in other words, make each of the 9 a little bit bigger so long as it only sees 9.9%.
It only includes 8 tenths. Yes. Okay, now that's what the trial court was talking about with the 9.9%. I don't concur that that's necessarily a finding that's required by the trial court, because in Tarrant County situation, it was 0.8% average deviation in House Bill 950, which went 9.4%, 10 times greater in their average deviation, in their deviation. So, what I say is the federal constitution requires that if you got to follow one man, one vote, and you've got some latitude to maintain county lines, Tarrant County didn't have to be cut.
What you're saying is that if you divide Tarrant County into 9 districts and satisfy the one man, one vote, and always they satisfy the no cut.
Yes.
And just leave the rest
of the county. Yes, Your Honor. I think the Constitution says that you've got to do that. I think the Constitution says there'll be a portion among the counties, not among the population within the county. And the effect is if you really, if you look at voters and citizens in terms of maintaining their relationship with the state government, those people that are excluded from their county, unnecessary. The testimony was not that Tarrant County was necessary to elect one man member or the Voting Rights Act. They just said, we have a legislative prerogative to take that step if we want to. Now, in Galveston County, which had approximately 6,000 population that would have to be rippled back to 2 representatives instead of 9, would end up with a plus 3% plus excess. And adjacent to a district that was underpopulated. And they said, well, we maintained the county line in Galveston County. And that was our prerogative too, because it was only 3%, plus 3% excess, according to the 2 representatives. And so what you have is a legislature that picks and chooses. When they look at El Paso, they say, we're not going to apply Article 3, Section 26 and maintain the county as a whole, even though it's only a 2% excess population per district. But in Galveston County, we are going to, where it's a 3% plus taxes among the two districts. And in Tarrant County, we're going to carve in there, and not only carve out enough to bring that in line, but they go 4% below, or 0.4% below. They went from 0.8% above. Could have taken 1 cent to track out and got it almost exactly, so they took 2 cents to track out because they said they had to ripple that up there to address the problems in Torrey, Ellery, and Cook County when they did the cut there. And as to Torrey, Ellery, and Cook, the only necessity, our exhibits there, reconforms the counties in North Central Texas, with Tarrant County remaining whole, and we were able to apportion the population there where we eliminated the cuts from Elah, we eliminated the cuts from Toria, we eliminated the cuts from Cook, and each of those counties were maintained whole, and so the end result of the option that the legislature claimed they had the right to do in taking that cut out of Tarrant County was that they created 3 additional cuts in a smaller county, and to maintain Tarrant County whole, like they did Gallatin County, they would have not had to make those 3 cuts. This is the orphan child who fled for mercy because of an orphan after committing still in the parent situation. After they carved up Tarrant County, they got that an option. They then justified those other 3 cuts, saying, well, we had to do that because we had to address one man, but they didn't. And I think that the evidence showed that in the trial court, and the only justification for making those cuts was that they don't think August 3, 26 means anything, except as Judge Greenhill suggested it, that you're portioning at least those numbers that you can divide the population by. And I don't think that's what's going to happen. Thank you. I would like first to respond to several questions that the court itself has posed, and urge any questions that the court may have. This is a case of some considerable consequence, and whatever may be the decision, I hope the decision be made in full understanding of the process the legislature followed and the legal issues with it. Viewed as significant during that process.
Not last year, we had more of a serious problem. Most of us have been home before we started.
First, with regard to the construction of Article 3, Section 26, the state is urgent. I wish that to be as clear as possible because from this point forward, any legislative district board or legislature that must functioning the district process is going to have to understand Article 3, Section 26. And the definition or the description of that provision which we urge is the one which was urged by the state of Texas in the United States Supreme Court in 1972. And that is as follows, specific. The state constitution requires that where a county has sufficient population to entitle it to a representative, that county itself to be a representative district. If the county itself is too small to be entitled to a representative, it shall be joined with one or more counties to form, compose a representative district. If a county has excess population, it is entitled to have as many districts as the population warrants within its county line, and the excess may be joined with contiguous areas. That was the state policy that the state of Texas followed in the plan that was presented to the Supreme Court of the United States in 1972, a plan that had been adopted by the Legislative Redistricting Board. It is, I think, the proper interpretation of Article 3, Section 26 and the decision in credit, because not only is it consistent with the purpose of that provision, it is a workable interpretation.
That
bill is going to be violated in Nueces County. See, we'd like to address Nueces County, yes, sir. I think that Nueces County, the districting of Nueces County is the critical issue in this case.
And in terms of the description of Article 3, Section 26, there is no question among the parties that it is agreed that Article 3, Section 26 requires that the whole district be placed with anything. And in the case of Nueces County, that did not occur in the plan that was finally adopted. Let me go ahead and take that out of order then and address Nueces County. What is important as a starting point, I think, is understanding the Voting Rights Act itself. Voting Rights Act requires that no election change, which means redistricting, can be adopted or implemented which has either the purpose or the effect of diluting minority voting. Either one of those criteria is sufficient. Now, who determines that? Under the Voting Rights Act, the determination of whether a redistricting plan has the purpose or effect of diluting minority voting strength is made by the Attorney General of the United States. The burden is on the state. Under the Voting Rights Act, the burden is placed upon the submitting authority to show that the plan does not have the purpose or the effect. The burden is not on someone else to show that you adopted it for that purpose, or someone else to show that it has an effect. You have to carry a burden to the Department of Justice that it doesn't have either one. The regulations of the Department of Justice specifically provide that if you don't carry that burden, the redistricting plan cannot be implemented. It cannot be enforced. It's in that context that the question with regard to Nueces County had to be addressed by the legislature. And I ask that you take that understanding of federal law and then apply it to the circumstances in which the decision was made. The legislature had, in I think, a rational manner, approached the process of redistricting on the basis of putting the whole district within each of the urban towns. And it did that with Nueces County. And the redistricting plan that was finally pulled together after all of these hearings and presented to all members of the legislature to review before it came out of committee had Nueces County with two whole districts and a portion combined with the Ramsey County as the third district. This was the 23rd of May, less than 8 days from the end of the legislative session. Keeping in mind that the census data that the legislature was compelled to use had only been available since the 1st of April. So that these 150 districts, single member districts, now, drawn in all the counties across the state, 150 districts, were in a statewide plan at that date. And Nueces County had the two districts to which it was assigned. The legislative committee charged with that responsibility then confronts the situation in which Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, which is very active in the state, very knowledgeable in the state, and who was very active during the entire legislative process, through a state representative who was elected in a district drawn by the federal court in 1976 in Nueces County. Representative Hugo Villanueva. The district was drawn by the federal court because the court found that the multi-member district there was unconstitutional. He came to the committee as a member of that committee and urged that if that plan was adopted as drawn, it would violate the Voting Rights Act, which means that if it does, that statewide plan can't be implemented. Under the Voting Rights Act, it is invalid. The legislature had to make a decision. It made the decision to go into Claiborne County. That was the plan that was presented to it. I can't say there were not other possibilities somewhere, but I would urge that's not the standard we apply. And that, in addition, other alternatives, if they existed, in
Yeah.